Welcome to Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are but not who we will be, and I believe that to be 100% true and that there is not a better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Just give you a quick science lesson for those who might not know. The caterpillar literally dissolves back into just cells and then reforms into the butterfly. I can't imagine that that is easy, but it isn't finished. It then has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it everywhere it's going to go once it gets out of the cocoon. Societal limitations are not easy to bust through either. But when we do it, we soar to great heights and wonderful things. And so today, I have a great guest, and she has a product that she is going to share with us, and I'm really excited for this because I think this would have really helped me as a child. And so I'm excited for the potential for millions of children to be helped with her product. But before we bring her on, I just want to remind you, be sure that you are liking and subscribing to this channel. Click the little notification bell so you get notifications for when I do go live so that you don't miss 1 second of the inspirational guests that I have on. Make sure you're giving us a hashtag like, and I'm sorry, a hashtag live and where you're watching from, or a hashtag replay and where you're watching it from. And so I think now I've covered all the boring stuff. And so I'm going to bring in Alicia. How are you doing, Alicia?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good, good. So first of all, did I say it right? I didn't ask you that ahead of time. Is it Alicia, not Alicia?
You got it. Yep, it's Alicia.
All right. All right. So tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you came from, kind of what brought you to me today.
Well, I'm an occupational therapist and I have been at OT for 25 years. Most of that's been in school, so I have worked in a lot of different settings. And now I have my own practice. I did see some kids privately. Now I've mostly contracted schools. And so then I've created this product. So I've been able to, that's how I connected with Shelley, as we are kind of both creator people and hoping to get that out there to people. And so, I'm excited. I'm in North Carolina.
Yeah. Awesome. So we have Tori joining us from North Carolina. She says hello. So for those who don't know, because I'm trying to remember if I've had an occupational therapist on the show before. So in case I haven't, or it's been a long time, obviously, because I can't remember if I have. So tell our audience, what does an occupational therapist do? What are all the different aspects that an occupational therapist can do? And then specifically, what you would do in a school setting?
So in general, you know, occupational therapists work on occupations or the things that take up your time. So that could be any part of your day. And if there's any interference with that because of a physical injury or a cognitive issue or some sensory delay, hearing impairment, visual impairment that keeps you from doing those things, that's where we come in. So those things might be getting dressed, they might be going through your morning routine, fixing a meal, play for kids, it's things like play and their schooling. So there's a lot of parts of their school day. Play is part of that. And just all the things that they have to do during the day. And so if there's any interference with that, then we address that. So in schools, particularly, we work on things like motor skills that might affect their ability to use tools. So that could be how they use scissors or how pencils and being able to follow how to make letters, how to write without fatigue. So a lot of times handwriting ends up being the thing we all work on a lot, but there's so much more that we can do. So kids that might have difficulty washing their hands, for instance, we might, you know, find strategies to help them sequence that or buttoning their jacket or something like that. So there's a lot of different components. In a private practice setting, you're going to work a little bit more on things that might be issues at the home, like brushing teeth or some of the self-care things, or you might have a little more going through the morning routine and things like that there. So schools are really focused on just the school stuff.
And I appreciate that you said that. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, though. Because at least here in Illinois, and my understanding as an IEP consultant is that the IEP is to help a person for further education, employment, and independent living. And so that brushing teeth, that's part of independent living. And so we incorporate those kinds of things in our goals here in Illinois, as something that the OT could be working on, or that the OT gives direction on to the special ed teacher, maybe. And then we work on that, you know, because obviously the OT isn't going to be, in most schools at least, there, you know, every moment that the school is open. And so I was given training by my OTs, and we had our students brushing their hair, brushing their teeth after lunch or after breakfast, you know, doing a lot of those things, again, because the purpose of that IEP is to prepare a child for independent living. And so that's not just within the school day itself. And something else that I don't think you touched on, and I think relates to the product that you've developed, is the sensory piece of occupational therapy.
Yes, thanks, of course. Yes. just a comment on the teeth brushing. So absolutely, if it's anything that they're doing in school that we can help support, so if it's already part of that plan, yeah, absolutely, OT can support that. In the schools I work at, they don't tend to, mostly because the kids I work with tend to have that already. But no, I will completely agree with you on that. And anything else that's helping the life skills. Yes, and sensory, yeah, that's a huge piece. So if there's anything that children or anybody that is they're sensory sensitive, or, you know, the sounds are a problem or certain textures are a problem and that affects their ability to get through their day, then we have a lot of different strategies we can use. Lots of times anxiety is tied to that. So like the sounds, especially, it's just right in our brain, just the way it works, you know, sounds are part of our warning system. And so sometimes we have to do anxiety strategies as well with that. But there's so many different pieces, reading internal signals, being aware of the environment, managing the environment might be part of what we do, not just working directly with the kids on things.
Right. And I think that goes, you know, very well with the philosophy of the show, is that, you know, a lot of times, as family or as educators, or even, you know, kind of society in general, they see somebody who is struggling with sounds, or we don't know what they're struggling with, but we know they're having a big emotion about something. And we tend to just say that they're overreacting, which in my opinion is setting a limit, because we're not allowing them to be who they are. And we're trying to tell them not to be who they are, or to just, you know, well, if you would just, and I had a teacher tell me this just recently, if the student would just try harder, then right. Yes. There are very few phrases that really get my goat more than, they just need to try harder. They're lazy.
Lazy. Oh, I was just about to beat you to that one. Yep. I agree.
Yeah. And so can we have a kind of a side note on a side discussion about why are they not lazy? Why would trying harder not work?
Right. If your brain is not developed in a way that you can take the next steps. I mean, kids, they don't have the experience and they don't have the language and they don't have the vocabulary. Lots of times you'd be able to know what they need. They can't even explain lots of times what the problem is. I mean, if you ask a kid, well, why didn't you finish that assignment? Or why didn't you do this, that, or the other thing? Or why did you do something that we don't want you to do? They usually can't tell you, right? They're not going to be able to explain it. Sometimes it's just impulsivity. The thought popped in their head and they just do it. And sometimes it's just because it's hard, but they don't know how to tell you that a lot of the time. So yeah, the lazy thing. Oh, and trying harder. It doesn't work. Yeah. But they're already, I think they're already trying their best. And I think we need to have that in mind, that every kid is always trying their best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have never had a student that I have worked with, and I'm sure you could say the same thing, whether that's a private client or a student in a school, that is just, oh, I'm just going to be lazy today. I'm just going to, you know, I'm not going to try because I want to get in trouble and I want to feel dumb and I want to have problems and I want to cause issues. I've never met a kid like that.
Not me neither.
all the ones that I've met are like, I wish I could do this.
Yeah.
You know, and they recognize that there is something within them that is causing them not to be able to perform in the way that whomever is wanting them to perform.
Right.
Tori says, just kind of going back to what we were mentioning before, I agree that North Carolina schools are not as open to ADLs and sensory. I did more of that in California and within home support. I am not sure what ADL stands for. Do you know?
Yes. So it's activities of daily living. So that's like toothbrushing and tying shoes and making food and all those daily activities.
Perfect. Thank you. I mean, that's one of those OT lingos apparently. So, I still do this though, but I try to explain all of those things to the audience because, you know, in our world, we have lots of acronyms for things and shorthand. And so Tori, thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. So the whole trying harder and they're being lazy. I would often tell teachers, like, if you could see inside their brain right now and inside the brain of a kid who does look like they're doing something, you would see that more than likely the activity of the brain of this person who you want to try harder is like their brain is all red because it's working. It's just hitting roadblocks.
That's good.
I worked with amazing teachers for the most part, but then I had a few that just really drove me crazy, honestly, and I had to figure out, like, how can I express this to you that you maybe will understand it a little bit differently. And I can go into some other examples, but this isn't about me, it's about you. So So your practice is in North Carolina. You've worked for 20 plus years in the OT world. So what was it? So let's talk about your product, what it is and why you developed it. What was the need for it?
Well, it's an interview tool and it has pictures and on one side and words on the other side. And it has a bunch of different things. So there's sensory things, social things. Some school related things, actually lots of school related things, just some other general things that kids can sort the cards to rate how much they are a problem for them. So they may rate it as not a problem, a little problem, medium problem, big problem, or I can't handle it. And so we get to see kind of what they are thinking about some of these things that they experience every day. So, you know, great example. That comes up a lot is they'll have the cards and I'll do this in the schools. And one of the cards says, being called on when they didn't raise their hand. And like, how much energy are they putting to this? And how this anxiety about potentially being called on, even if they know the answer, they just don't necessarily want to be put on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, that sometimes comes up and then we can add that as an accommodation. And so one of the reasons I do this is because, I'd be out these OT groups and people would say, oh, this kid does such and such and such and such. And how do we like fix this or work on this? And I always just like wonder, why aren't you asking the kid? Why aren't you asking them? Sometimes they can just tell you. And it's like, why aren't we not going to the source and listening to the voices of the people that we are actually working with? And so, you know, that's such an important piece of this is how we can get that information. And sorry, all I have is a box right now on there. I'm waiting for my photographer to take pictures of all the cards.
<That's>
My social media has a little bit more on there, but there's 140 cards, a couple of blank ones. And you know, it's got things like therapies and, you know, school things like reading and math and writing and, you know, things that sometimes we can see and sometimes things we don't see when we look at how the kids are doing. You know, one of the things that's been really helpful with this is to catch the kids who might be masking at school. So we're not seeing them have big issues at school, but then they're having these big meltdowns at home. And so we can catch that, you know, I can see that a little bit better and it's kind of evident, you know, kids, kids don't lie. You're like, you know, they're not going to do this and put things in one place that don't really fit with what they do. I find the kids being very, you know, they're very open and honest when they do this, as long as they understand it. I've used it with kids from age four and up. So it's been really insightful.
That's awesome. And so I've got your website address scrolling across the bottom, and it is the Stress Detective. It's all one word, .com. And so on that website, and I can show it again if you would like me to, if there's any parts of it that you want me to go through. But the price right now is $49.99. And you get, like she said, the 142 cards, the 140, and then the two blank ones. And I mean, just looking at all the different ways, you know, gives adult valuable insight into a child's needs, empowers children with a sense of control, supports children with strategies or accommodations for specific triggers. And it can be used, I like this, as both an interview tool and a treatment tool. And so can you talk a little bit more about that regarding it as a treatment tool?
Well, it's really helpful, like in a group, just to understand other people's perspectives, for instance. So if you have a bunch of children in the same room and you can see that, okay, well, this kid can handle this and this one can't. And you can, some of the times it's a good way to work on perspective taking with them, direct problem solving. So sometimes I use it for data collection, like I might do it more than once and get that feedback. But also you can see they can also track, like, look, this used to be over here and now it's here. And so let's find, or you told me this during a session that this was a big trigger for you. So how can we work on that specifically? And so sometimes I'll use it that way. And what do you think we would need to do to move it to, you know, maybe a little problem instead? So perspective taking is one way. I don't really like the idea of imposing our idea of what a big problem or little problem is on kids. I think that's been one of the things that's been out there as a treatment strategy, and it kind of invalidates them. So if having a pencil break is a big deal for them while they're writing, well, let's respect that and validate that. And if we say, well, it's really a little problem because you just need to go get a new pencil, you know, well, they see it that way, right? So at one point I did do that kind of thing, and it didn't feel good. It didn't feel good doing that. So,
Yeah. So Tori asked the question, she actually has two questions. So we'll answer this one first. Are the blank cards to personalize?
Yes. So you can write them with like a whiteboard marker, like a Visa B marker, or paste some pictures on yourself for anything that may not be included, because really kind of made like a bazillion of these cards, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, like right. Go on forever. Yeah. What was the other question?
I had the first one and put the second one up there. That's the problem. Can this be used with young adults too?
That's a great question. I feel like the box, this is sort of what I tell people, I do feel like the box is a little childish. And I've kept it that way because it really grabs their attention and they show so much interest in it. The cards, however, and the boards are made to be really for any age. So they don't look, they've got little meters on them, the boards do, that say what side of the problem it is. I said, it's not officially live for sale yet. I'm waiting just on those pictures before I make it official, but just so everybody knows, it's not you can buy it now. I just don't have all the shipping like officially set up yet for that, so it's just a shipping rate at this point, so you might want to wait on that. But the boards and the cards, like they don't look like they're for young kids, so okay. I use it with teenagers. I just don't keep the box where they can see it because it does look a little childish, I think, for older kids and young adults. But I haven't used it with young adults, but I have with middle and high schoolers, and I've responded fine to it.
That's awesome. Would you by chance have some of the cards with you today, or are they all in manufacturing somewhere?
I do. They're just right over here, but I do have some.
Okay.
I can grab them real quick.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, I'll take you out of the screen and I'll just put me up here for just a second and let you go grab those. I apologize to the audience. I didn't ask her ahead of time to have those ready. That was just kind of a thought that popped up while we were talking. So it looks like she's back. So I'm going to bring her back onto the screen. I'm a visual person, so I just think that seeing them, you know, will give a better understanding. And Tori says, yeah, I think teens and young adults could benefit. So,
So you can go ahead. Here's one for art class. So I've got words on one side, a picture on the other, you know, music. So these are my school ones. The other thing about this is that they're color coded. So all the school ones are, this is my prototype, not my official one, because my photographer has that. So this is the one I've been testing out. So like all the school ones, like recess, those are all yellow. And the things that are sensory, like touching things like sand that are greeny, like they're all purple. So there's lots of those. Thinking people are having negative thoughts. So this is like one of a more of a social kind of card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've got a few different categories. They've been consolidated from this particular one, but some things that are focused more on like a lack of flexibility, some rigidities, like seeing someone else break a rule. Oops, sorry. Someone stepping on the grass when they shouldn't be. My artist is amazing.
That's a great one. Can we just talk about that one for a second? Because that perspective, I hear that so often, you know, that kids, especially kids that I've worked with, because they tend to have that magnifying glass or microscope, whatever you want to call it, where they are, everything they do, it seems like, is caught by an administrator or, you know, an adult or whomever. And yet they'll see kids breaking rules and not getting into trouble. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that. So what sort of strategies do you use with that specific card to help the students understand, A, that life isn't fair and some people are going to get away with things. It's just how that is, and how to handle that, you know, what their thoughts and feelings are about that.
Yeah. I think, one of the things is maybe going through what you can and can't control. And I do a lot of work on flexibility and cognitive flexibility. And I think that's just one of the pieces, what you can and can't mm-hmm. control, if it's that kind of thing. There's a lot of other things that you can do to work on that in general. But for that specific thing, that's maybe what I would focus on.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's that. I mean, that's how I would have done it. So, of course, I agree with you. And I think it's a great idea. So let's see. Tori says, yeah, that's a great one. They are told and instructed about rules. So that can stress them out to see others break rules. Yeah. And especially a lot of kids that are very black and white. You know, like if you break the rule, you should always get in trouble. And then sometimes people break the rule and they get talked to, but they don't get in trouble, or, you know, they don't get the same consequence as someone else. And so I really appreciate that you have that one in there, because I do think that is such a struggle for so many of, again, the children that I saw and you know, probably most of the ones that you see as well. Because they do seem to have that, they're, like I said, they're under the microscope. They're, you know, they're, everything they do is so much different and seems to be caught more. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but yeah.
Well,
so what other ones do you have in there?
Let's see. There's some more family. I guess it's not so much family. Crowds. I put some in here, like bugs and snakes, and my big thing that I would put in I can't handle is being tickled. So I generally like an example with the kids so they can see how it works. And I'm going to show you some of mine. Like, I love cats. So cats and dogs are in there. So those things that a lot of people love, but they might be afraid of too. Partly why the bugs and the snakes are in there, and spiders, because it helps us. I think it's really important that we are authentic and genuine in how we do things like this. So if you can be, if it is something that's a bother to you, that you can honestly say that in there, or maybe use the blank card for yourself. Cause I like them to see too that, look, I have a thing that I can't handle either. So don't tickle me, or I'm going to be mad and it's going to be a big problem. Yeah. And so, you know, like, but I handle that because nobody tickles me, or I tell them not to tickle me, right? So sometimes I can use that kind of strategy with this too as a treatment tool. This is how I handle this, even though it's a big problem for me. Because, you know, I have things like, you know, maybe I don't like losing a game, for instance, but I can put that in, and I can put that still in, I can handle it, even if I don't like it. So sometimes having that kind of example, you don't have to like everything that you can handle.
Right. Oh my gosh. That's another, I think, really big one. And I feel like I've been seeing this more and more, is that we don't ever want people to feel sad. And we think like, oh my gosh, they're sad. Something's wrong. Like, we have to jump in and rescue and get them happy again. And I think we're doing a disservice when we're doing that, because it's uncomfortable for everyone. Obviously the person going through it and those around, right, it's uncomfortable because we don't know what to do. But I think that's great. Like, yeah, you can do hard things. It's going to be hard. I don't always, I appreciate so much of what you've shared already. And I'll try to hit some of the points that you said, that really struck me, as I really admire the fact that you will share with the kids, well, I have things that bother me. And, you know, for me, it's a big deal, this thing over here. But maybe for you, it's not. And so understanding, you know, having that, like, oh, okay, for me, your big thing isn't so big for me, but my big thing isn't big for you. And, you know, helping them, like you said, that saying to kids like, oh, it's no big deal. Just go get, it's not a big problem. Just go get another pencil. Well, to them in that moment, you have to validate what they're going through. Like, okay, here's how we get through this. We're going to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, or you help them, however you work that through, brainstorm with them. The whole thing of going back to, I feel sad. I don't want to do it. I don't like it. I shouldn't have to do it because I don't like it. Well, that's not life. I mean, we can't like everything that we do. It's just not a possibility. And I do want to just quickly, Tori asked the question. Yes, Tori, this will be replayed. And it'll wherever you're watching from, if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, it's that same link. Excuse me. Sorry. So absolutely. Yes. I'm glad that you invited people, and I hope that they will, watch later if they're not available today. So I apologize. I just wanted to make sure that I answered that question. So what else do you want to talk about regarding the cards and the whole stress detective concept?
I get a little bit more information from this than just what's on the cards. So those kids that might have difficulty with cognitive flexibility, sometimes you'll see with that they don't get the gray areas in between, and everything goes and I can't handle it or I can handle it. That's really telling a lot of the time too, or with the color coding, I might see that in the specific patterns that there's a lot of sensory stuff or there's a lot of school stuff. Lots of times it's mixed up, but and the things that are sensory in here, you know, they're things like self-care things, like brushing teeth or brushing hair or taking a shower. They're self-care, but usually when there's an issue, it's often related to sensory. So they're in there as that, although that may not be the only thing that might make it difficult. But typically that's why I categorize things that way. And I'll have information on my website. I'll have like a sample of how I do it and all that, so people know how to give it. But right now that's not on there. It is coming. But my social media has a little bit more. My Facebook has a little bit more information, so you can get a little better look at what it looks like. So I have a video on there.
And while you're talking about those things, I'm going to pop those up really quickly and just tell what all of those are. So basically, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, it is those.coms, and then the stress detective. Instagram, there's the number 2 behind it. So if you're looking for her on one of those social media platforms, you most definitely can find her. Just type in whichever of those 3 platforms and the stress detective, and I'm sure it will pop up. I wanted to talk a little bit, and we mentioned this before. This isn't the one that I wanted to talk about yet. That was your Facebook group. We can talk about it. If you want to talk about it now, we can talk about it now or later. It doesn't matter.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I mean, you already brought it up, so I guess we can, unless you had something else you wanted to launch into.
No, I was going to go into your document because I've got your blog pulled up. So we'll go into that after we talk about your Facebook group.
The Facebook group is really, it's very general as far as advocacy for children. So that where we can go ask questions and for advice, whether it's at the individual level or more of a systems level, like, you know, schools and things, or it might be
national or international. It's for just anything that might be an advocacy moment or where we could get a question answered or action to take, that anything that supports children. So I would love to have people join. It's really small and still just starting out. But like one of the questions, for instance, that I posed in there is, you know, what would you do if you are in a school and a teacher says that a child, you hear the teacher say, well, you can't go to recess unless you do such and such. And you know that recess is a right, right? So, or it's just a need for the kid if it's not, you know, in the law. So things like that, that we can problem solve together are things I'm hoping we can work on to ultimately create change, to have more respect for them, for children, and make differences at lots of different levels. So,
yeah.
Anyone's welcome to join it.
Awesome. So I just put the link to the Facebook group in the chat box. So everyone should be able to just go there and click on it rather than have to worry about trying to type it in. And then I've also included your website address. So again, hopefully they can just go in there and click on it and go. Tori asked, as far as the Facebook group, is the group for educators only or also parents? Great question.
That is a great question. It's for anybody. So parents, educators, therapists, anyone who cares about children and is willing to take some action, even if it's just responding or asking questions in there, is really welcome, because, you know, everything starts with small steps. So whatever little bits we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that is, sorry, before we move on, I'm going to move out of the Facebook group discussion and go to your blog and the document. So you're ready to move on. Okay. So on your website, you have your blog, and I know you have a document that you said is available for people to give them options for communicating what they need and when they're what they want. So which looks like you have great blogs. I love the titles. So which one would they look for to find that document?
It's the one about coping, helping children cope with the little meditating girl.
This one?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's, so how we help children cope is what it's called, for anyone who might just be listening. Yes. And you can see a little thumbnail if you scroll down to it. But what it is, it's a document that has some pictures on it of things that might help children feel better. And it has things like talk it out, get a hug, a moment alone, things like that, that can help not only give children options. So having that, you know, that feeling of choice is really helpful for people to have, for the kids. So they have this sense of control. But also it's teaching them that there's things that can help them feel better. And so, you know, a drink of water is on there, because sometimes just the distraction of going and getting a drink is helpful. I intentionally did not include food on here, although sometimes that really does help. Right. Some children that have low blood sugar, and that starts to, you know, get them have more difficulties. But I also don't want to encourage food as a self-regulation tool for the kids that don't need it. So that is not on here. But, you know, so they can communicate with us. Like, I would love to see this in every classroom, just because it helps them know what options they have either when they're about to get upset and they need something to calm them down before they hit that threshold and can't get back from it, or when they're just calming down from something. Okay, so what do you need right now? What can help you right now? And it does have the option of something else as well. So that might be a specific thing for that child that we could add in that space. But this is free, you know, this is a free download that people can have. It's got cute little pictures on it. And I would love to share that, to get it out there for more people. And it's great for home too. It's not just a school thing. It's definitely great in any environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's just really easy to go to. It's her website, thestressdetective.com/blogs. And then you're going to find the one that's titled How We Can Help Children Cope. It was just a couple down. I didn't have to go very far. And then read the article first. And then once you're finished with the article, then there's the download button for that graphic right there. And I just want to focus on that. You've got the fidget things, and you mention that you call them tools, and they absolutely are tools. And I think that we don't understand tools. You know, when I was a kid, my dad didn't just hand me a wrench and expect me to know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
He showed me how to use it. He showed me when it was appropriate to use it. And we often give kids fidgets and expect them to know when to use it, how to use it, when to know if it's helping or not. We just assume. And so I'm so glad that you put those and you put the word tools. And I hope, and maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but has that been your experience as well, that
we hand kids? Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. That's absolutely true with anything. And the more that we can educate what, like the purpose of what we're doing and giving, now I don't ever give like a wiggle seat or anything to a child. And just say, here it is. So this is to help you when you're wiggly, you know, I'm going to give them a why they're getting this thing so they understand. And with things like fidgets, I actually have a fidget lesson. I bring out a whole ton of fidgets and I say, there's some that help you focus and there's some that help you chill out and calm down. And we're going to sort them out, and maybe they don't do either for you. So the really fun ones, because I mean, this is the thing about fidgets, is people kind of have this mindset that it's something that helps you focus. And I think in the schools, especially, that's really been the focus of a fidget. And so everyone took all those fidget spinners away years ago when we had those. And then, but they're like one of the best ones for some kids to just regroup. Right. And so we pull out all those different ones and they find the ones that work for them, or they think will work for them. They say, okay, well, we'll try it. You know, if they think it's going to work. And of course they don't always, but we at least try it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tori, I appreciate this comment. She can see this as part of a sensory diet. And she also said it was great to have other options besides being food dependent. Tori, I so love all your comments. You're loving the options and the choices. If anyone else is watching, please give us comments, because, you know, the more comments we get, you know, the better interactive episode this can be. And that's exactly what I want. And yeah, how to use a tool. Yeah, because exactly what you were just alluding to a second ago when you were talking about sometimes they don't work. You know, sometimes a 5/8 wrench isn't going to work, and I'm going to need a 1/2 inch, or I'm going to need a 3/4 inch, or I'm going to need a hex wrench. And, right. You know, I can't just go, oh, well, the wrench doesn't work, and throw it away and think that's the only tool that I can try. Maybe I need a hammer.
Right. Right.
The completely wrong tool. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board kind of and figure out what I need. And I think I find that too a lot, is that we get, I don't want to say lazy, but we just be like, oh, well, it doesn't work. And we don't try anything else.
Yes. Yeah. They can't handle a fidget, or they can't do that. Right.
Absolutely. Right. They're not using it correctly. Well, did you show them how?
Right. Well,
what do you mean? I mean, they should know. Like, no, they don't. They don't know. You didn't know how to do math until someone showed you how to do all the different ways that you can do math.
Well, and along those lines, just lots of times we just need to make expectations clear. Like, when you have this, you're expect, this is what we're looking for. The expectations to use this is this. And I think lots of times we don't even tell those to the children. Like, this is the expectation in this situation. And they're expected to guess it. And when we can be explicit about that too, that can be really helpful.
Yes. And, again, Tori's exactly, and not just give out without education on use of the tool. And honestly, something that I have been hearing a lot of, and I feel so bad as a former special ed teacher that I haven't been phrasing things in this way. We don't just educate the child. We have to help the teacher too. You know, if we're the parent or we're the IEP team and we've decided, or we've brought in, you know, here, I know that these tools work for my child, but we don't teach the teacher, okay, this is what it looks like when the child is using, and they might play with it. And so this is what it looks like when they're playing with it. And it's not necessarily being helpful to them, because that's the case too. I mean, I'm thinking like medicine, you know, I don't always need an antibiotic. Once my whatever I was dealing with is taken care of for that time period, then I don't need that antibiotic anymore. I might need it again later, but I don't need it anymore in that moment. So, you know, just having having that too, and supporting the teachers, because when you're writing those IEPs, inevitably it's going to bleed over into the next year. And that right. teacher won't have been present at the IEP meeting when this was discussed, how it's used and all of that. And they sadly typically don't write that stuff into the IEP.
Right.
And so then that new teacher doesn't have the directions of how to use it. And so we have to make sure that we are not just teaching the student, but teaching all the adults that will be interacting with the student. And that might right. be multiple teachers, because it might be, I could tell a really horrible story. I'll tell you off time about a situation that happened. But we have to teach all the adults in a school setting, you know, this is right. a tool, this is helping, and this is what it's helping and why it's helping. Yeah. So I'm with Tori. I appreciate all the different options on that document. And again, the link is in the chat. So make sure you go to the chat. I'll pop it up. I think here we go. So that's your Facebook group. That's not the one I wanted. You grab your blog. That's what I'll do. I'll just grab the blog and I'll put the blog in the chat and then they can go right to it from the chat. Sometimes, see, it takes my brain a little bit to catch on to and do what I what makes sense. And Tori just had another comment. Where did it go? Here it is. I had a teacher putting other students into a vest because it's for kids with attention issues.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're not educating our teachers. We give the tools to them and expect them to know how to use them, just like we do it with the students and right. can't, you know, and you know. It's like, oh, light bulb, when we say it, like, duh, how did we not know that? But we just sometimes don't think about what we're doing all the way through.
And sometimes when you're so in it and you've been in it for a long time, you sort of think like things like fidgets, for instance, are pretty mainstream now, and wiggle cushions. And mm-hmm. some of these tools that we use are so mainstream that we think everyone kind of already knows because they've been out there for so long that anyone can right. go get them. And that's not really the case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Awesome. So I think, like I said, I think I dealt with anxiety when I was a child. Only then we didn't know that's what it was because it wasn't a named thing. Because mm-hmm. I was born in the 1900s, and you know I've been on the planet for a really long time. And so I think if this product had been available to my family, to my doctors, to my teachers, my life would have been a lot easier. Because I just kept saying, well, my stomach hurts. I don't feel good. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, like you said at the beginning, I didn't have the words to really explain what I was feeling or what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And so, having something like this would have been, a whole lot easier. So Tori says she's so excited to try this out and see all the uses plus use with her older daughter. So yeah, go to the website, pre-order them. Cause you said they're not officially released yet.
Correct.
Right.
Within the next week, but they should be it should be very shortly. Just okay. those pictures.
Perfect.
I want people to see what they're actually buying a little better before I make it official. and I will be sending out a discount code for anyone on my website or on my email list. So, if you go download that, it's going to get you on my email list. If you go download that, from the blog, you'll get on there. So you will definitely get the discount code.
All right. So make sure you go to, where is it? I had it here somewhere. Thestressdetective.com. Go to that blog specifically, which is, got to find it again. go to the specific blog here and, how we can help children cope. Download that and you will get on her email list. Is there another way to get on your email list?
I'm just going to say, if you want to just email me, that's fine too.
Okay. All right. So that is, info@thestressdetective.com. We'll get you on her email list and get you that code for these amazing Stress Detective cards. I kind of think we've like in different parts talked about these types of supports, but what are some ways that you have seen anxiety present in children and then ways to help them recognize those and help them to deal when they get into those situations? I just want to be real, like, this is the point where we're going to talk about that.
Well, definitely, like what you said, physical symptoms are often what we might see. Sometimes, a lot of times, people think something's a sensory issue, and usually it's clothing related. And children can't get comfortable in their clothes, and they're changing their clothes a lot, or they're not accepting whatever their options are before they get to school. And lots of times, what comes up is, oh, well, they have a sensory issue. It's usually more anxiety if there aren't other kind of sensory things going on too. So just kind of be aware of that. That, I mean, occupational therapists can probably still help you, but lots of times it's more anxiety strategies that I would work on with that child. And in addition to just being more comfortable in their skin, but those are some of the main signs. Of course, in schools, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that pretty much anytime you see any behavioral things, unless it's hyperactivity, I mean, some kids with ADHD are, you know, impulsive and having difficulty focusing. And we don't always want to see those kind of things in school, but a lot of times refusals to do work, or, you know, if a kid crumples up a paper and throws it or does something aggressive, it's almost always related to anxiety. And we just have to figure out what the why is. A lot of times it's because they're, you know, sometimes we do these FBAs, right? These functional behavior assessments, and we say, oh, they're trying to avoid the work, but then there's like nothing that comes after that.
Yes.
Okay. So they're avoiding it, but now why are they avoiding it? And then what are we going to do about that?
at that point, I become a 2-year-old. Why? You know, and I love that we have, you know, the 4 or 5 functions of behavior, but why? Right. Yeah.
Exactly. We need more information, and we need to support them with whatever that why is.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it hard for them? Is it that there's so many reasons, right, why they might be doing that. So let's support them instead of declaring it and making it a behavior issue and making a behavior plan out of it. Right.
Right. And we can still, I mean, I think a behavior plan is still okay.
Yeah.
We have to stop. I feel like when we say the function is avoidance, that's a band-aid.
Yeah.
But we need to look deeper and go, okay, what do we need to apply ointment as well as the band-aid? Is that going to help? Like, and how do we help the child not need, or, you know, I hate to say not need, but, help them get their need met. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So that they're not having these outward behaviors, and to try to regulate and try to help get them back into that. Have you heard about the upstairs, downstairs brain?
Yeah.
So that's Sowers and Hall, I think. I know they're one that talk about it. But yeah, help get them back into that downstairs brain, where they're kind of more in control again of their emotions and their needs, and their needs are being met. And
and this is where it's so helpful to get their information, because sometimes you might assume that if they're avoiding, it's something challenging, but it turns out that the teacher is playing this really loud music right beforehand, and they're overstimulated from the noise, and then they can't focus on whatever it is. You know, so we don't always know without getting their information.
Yeah. And that is, oh, I love that you said that. Tori says her youngest deals with anxiety, and it can be hard to figure out what's up with her behavior. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And something that I have said for years is that behavior is communication. And trying to, you know, and I like that you had the word detective as part of your product, because I feel like as a special ed teacher, I had to become a detective and try to figure out what's the communication behind this behavior. And sometimes you may never know. Many times, maybe you may never know. But if you recognize that there is something trying to be communicated, rather than this kid is acting this way just because, I think it gives you a different approach to the situation.
Right.
And I've learned a lot from my OT friends and my BCBAs, my occupational therapy friends, and my board certified behavior analyst friends, and my physical therapist as well, and my speech therapist as well. Having been in education, I've got a lot of friends in all the related services, but But yeah, there's so much, you know, no one is one dimensional, and right. certainly children are not one dimensional. There's a lot of things going on with them at all times. And sometimes more than I think we give them credit that they're dealing with.
Yep. I agree.
You know, I think there's a lot of stuff that happens, and going back to the whole anxiety piece, the pandemic was so hard and is still difficult for a lot of children, because, you know, we as adults kind of sort of had an idea and could understand what was happening, mm-hmm. but the kids really had no idea. I'm supposed to be in school. Now I can't be in school. I have to wear a mask. I don't have to wear a mask. I have to get a vaccine. I shouldn't get a vaccine. And they were just constantly getting all this information. And then all the adults around them were also confused. And I feel like, you know, there's a uptick in students struggling with anxiety since the pandemic. Do you see that also?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I mean, a lot of adults became very anxious during that time, and mm-hmm. that we send those messages to children, even without those, yeah. you know, things you just said, that the worry about getting sick or following the rules or whatever it might be, you know, our right. worries are always contagious. I like to say that they're just contagious. So especially mm-hmm. from parent to children, you know, that's, they hear, these children hear.
Yeah. Yep. And Tori says being proactive versus reactive using these cards is brilliant. And I absolutely agree. I think that the more proactive we can be, the less reactive we'll have to be.
Right.
Because we're meeting those needs. We're helping the child learn, you know, I mean, like you talked about, you have coping strategies, like you deal with this one thing that's really big for you and that's hard for you, but you've learned ways to get to the other side of that big thing. And we have to, kids aren't getting it naturally. I don't remember myself right. being directly taught strategies, but I think we have to be more intentional today because our kids are so distractible because there's so much information. And I'm not just talking like, oh, your kid's on screen time and that's horrible. You shouldn't allow that. I'm just talking about everything everywhere. Talks that I give, I talk about the fact that we process 74 gigabytes of information every single day. Wow. And that's not just adults. That's everybody. That's children processing wow. that. And that is like watching 16 movies. That's how much information 74 gigabytes is. How can they pick up everything? You know, there's right. so much, you know, and that amount has just constantly increased over the years. We didn't have that much information coming at us. So we could pick up things a little bit easier mm-hmm. indirectly. But kids now just have way too much to process out to figure out what's the important stuff. So we do have to be more direct, more intentional.
Yeah. Well, I think in the past, you know, I mean, I'm Gen X, where we were just told to, you know,
suck it on.
You know, suck it up.
Yep.
Just you just kind of learn to deal. And even though learning to deal might be shutting it down instead of actually dealing with it, right? Pressing it down. So, I mean, I think just in general, explicitly teaching self-regulation, coping, mm-hmm. you know, how to handle things that are hard is good for everybody. So,
yeah.
I love, you know, some schools I know have that as in their curriculum, and I wish every school did.
So. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I like Tori's little, oh my gosh, emoji when I said how much we process. Cause yeah, it's insane. And it's just crazy. So Alicia, we've got just a few more minutes here, and I want to make sure, in these last few minutes that if we have not covered something that you wanted to cover today, that we absolutely get into that for these last few minutes. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
There is something that I think everybody should be aware of. And I'm hoping that this might be a bit of an eye opener for people who aren't aware of this thing. And that's, it's related to cognitive flexibility, also called mm-hmm. cognitive shift. And I think, you know, this is the ability from your brain to shift gears. And so I wanted just to talk about the kids that get stuck. Like they have a meltdown, right? Or something is really bothering them and they get stuck. And like they're in this expectation to do something at that time. Mm-hmm. Maybe they did something that we don't want them to do. Like they broke something, for instance. And, you know, I think the natural reaction for a lot of people is to get mad when something like that happens, you know, from adults. Like, right. You know, if I'm playing a game with a child and they break, you know, they get upset because they lost the game and they break part of my game. Well, that doesn't make me very happy because I
exactly
on this game. Right. So, and in that situation, if a child is like really upset and me throwing more words at them is never going to be helpful. First of all, like they're upset, they're in their own little world. So this is something that I do that I have found super effective. But I think when someone from the outside who has this mentality of like a behavior kind of mentality, they're going to see it as a reward, but it's absolutely not a reward. It's cognitive. It's working on cognitive flexibility and shift. So I will pull out something like a toy and I'll have them, or bubbles are my very favorite. I love bubbles. So I will use bubbles because it distracts them. So the idea is like to distract them from whatever they're upset about because they can't,
right.
They cannot move on from what they're doing, but it looks like I'm rewarding this behavior by giving them a toy or bubbles or something. And then we can come back to whatever it is typically and process it if it's something we need to process. But I just want to, that's really an executive functioning skill that I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand. And so I'm hoping that, you know, some of the listeners might keep that in mind, that the distraction into something fun is okay in that situation because they're not going to do what you want them to do right now. And talking at them is not going to be helpful either. So
yes,
that was one thing I wanted to make sure to bring up.
Yes, that is such a great point. And I'm glad that we had opportunity to talk about it because yeah, it's absolutely what you said. People on the outside are like, oh, they're just rewarding that behavior. And you're not. It's like, and I can't think of a good example at the moment, but you know, you're stuck in a whirlwind in your brain and you've got to have something, whether that's a loud clap or, you know, getting whatever, you know, it's a distractor.
Right. And being silly is great for that too. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So Tori says, so shift attention, then return to address the issue.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
That's the thing, because they can't do it themselves. So it's definitely, and it's so effective. And I promise that children are not putting those two things together, that, you right. know, they're upset. We're focused on the emotional piece. So they may have a behavior thing that we don't like that they did when they're upset. But I promise you, they're not putting those two things as a connector, that if I do this, I get this. Absolutely promise you on that one.
Yeah. And I've had to apply this to myself sometimes. Like when you're stuck on a problem and you know, you have spent all day trying to figure out the answer to this, the solution to this problem. And then, you know, it's a work thing. You go home. And so you're getting away from it. When you come back to it the next day, it's like, boom, the answer's mm-hmm. right there. It's the same concept.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not necessarily in the moment, but if you could in the moment, just go, okay, I'm going to put this problem up on the shelf for a minute and I'm going to go get a cup of coffee or I'm going to go for a walk or I'm going to go sleep. I remember dealing with this with my daughter and I didn't know this when I was going through it, but this would have helped me again. Like, oh, I got to get this homework done. I got to get this homework done. I can't figure out the answer. And you know, you're sitting there for 45 minutes. But if you were to just go sleep, and this happened so many times with our daughter, that if we could just get her to go to bed and just say, we're going to wake you up 20 minutes early tomorrow morning and we're going to tackle this. That 20 minutes was all it would take, or less mm-hmm. usually, for her to, because her brain has reset. It's been mm-hmm. refreshed. It's gotten unstuck. Like you said, yeah. They're stuck.
And reset. That's what I like to call it too. It's like, it's just a reset. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. 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 On the drive home, making dinner. So true. All right. Well, I so appreciate this conversation, Alicia. Thank you for being my guest today. And I see tremendous success with your cards in your future. And I'm so excited to be able to share that and you with my audience as one of the first opportunities for people to know about this product. right before it goes live. And so thank you for sharing that with me. And thank you, Tori, and the Learning Disabilities Association, and L.A. Janssen, who have joined and who've liked. And be sure, if you are, again, I'm just going to reiterate this really quick. If you are watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay where you're watching from. And if you have any questions or comments for Alicia, be sure to put those in the chat and I will make sure that she gets those and that we answer your questions. Be sure to, like I said, like, subscribe, and be sure to click that notification button so that you don't miss even 1 second of hashtag No Limits, because we know who we are, but not who we will be. Have a great week, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.